everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more personally minded life. With me, Linda Vanella. Linda, welcome.
Hi, Armand. I'm glad to be here.
We were kind of trying to explain to some children what it's like to use different protective mechanisms. And we realized that in doing so, we were organizing styles that people use to protect themselves. So I want to describe, as if we were, as we were telling them, what defense mechanisms are. And we'll start with Linda. Linda, we'll start with that. What is a defense?
A defense mechanism is a means of using some kind of way to when we get nervous or when we feel anxious. It's something that psychologically in our mind we use to protect ourselves, to keep ourselves removed from stressing ourselves and giving ourselves pain.
Why would we have to do that?
Well, because we are designed to either fight or flight. If we have a situation in life, we either attend to it or we run from it. That's our natural instinct. And so it's the way that the mind kind of keeps itself safe and ready to attack, need it be so. So there are different ways that the mind uses different tools when it feels anxiety to help it get through that way of either staying in a place where it's ready to trigger and fight.
I think what you're saying that's very important here, Linda, is that anxiety is a key. So every being is created with a mechanism for protecting itself from danger.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's trying to protect itself from danger, and the way that it protects itself is by having an antenna. And the antenna is anxiety. Anxiety, nervousness, is your nerves telling you something may be wrong. Not something is wrong. Something may be wrong. So if you're a flower and you have a tendril and the breeze is too strong, it sends a signal down through the flower. And the flower does something to protect itself. Maybe it stiffens its neck against a stronger breeze. Maybe it closes its head in case there's too much rain. We all have mechanisms based on our senses that tell us there may or may not be a danger. Now, for many people, they see a lot of danger. So they're defending themselves all the time. Other people see no danger at all. And so they're wide open all the time. They could get run over by a car, you know, they wouldn't know the difference. And then there's something in between that we all do. These, in psychology, are called defenses. Defenses. We're looking at a certain group of them today. We're looking at the ones called checking out defenses.
Checking out defenses are those ways and times when we feel we're in so much danger that we feel the need to almost feel numb or check out or daydream or kind of remove ourselves from the present situation.
So we could, as humans, separate ourselves from a situation when we perceive that there's potential danger. I don't think flowers could do that. You know, I'm not sure, but they may be able to. There are a number of ways that we do it as humans. One is called dissociation. Another is called depersonalization. Another is derealization. Another is depression. Notice all these DEs. Then there's disconnecting. And then there's our old favorite, abnegation. Ah, that's an A, right? But abnegation is another word for denial. Denial. We see something that doesn't make sense. We see a fact too uncomfortable to accept. We don't want to see it. We go blind. Right? We see our father lying to our mother. We know he's lying. We deny it. We tell his story as real. This is one of the ways that our mind protects us from getting too anxious. Because if you believed what you were seeing is true, if you saw reality, you may not want to be there. You would have to be out on your own, which would be more dangerous. So, for example, many couples use denial as a way of dealing with each other. I just won't see this in my partner. I don't see it. This way I'm safe. This way I don't have to react. This way I don't have to do anything. This way I don't have to put myself at greater risk. And the greater risk would be out there on my own. But let's look at some of the other D things that we do. Now, if you're feeling nervous and you don't like what you're feeling, especially if it's not only anxiety, but if it's things that bring up feelings in you that you don't like, for example, anger. You don't like getting angry. You're going to have to do something to quell the anxiety. And one of the things you do is called depression. Exactly as it sounds. You depress the energy. So how do you do that when you're somebody who gets angry at somebody and you're not used to getting angry and you don't like getting angry? What's the mechanism? Well, a trick that people use is they get angry at themselves for getting angry. And by beating yourself up, you eventually get depressed. But this way, you don't have to face the greater reality, which is having to deal with the anger that you feel. Because you're so used to pushing it down all the way. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella. We're trying to explain this to some kids who are getting it, understanding completely. Oh, yeah, I know what that's like. One of them talked about daydreaming. I'm in school. I don't want to be in school. I'm listening to this teacher. And I say, well, what are you feeling? And you look underneath and the person says, well, it's kind of like, I just wish the teacher would shut up. So what are you doing? So I'm dreaming about a baseball game. So daydreaming for that child was a way of dealing with their outrage, with their anger. And daydreaming is another form of defense. What's it called? So what's the difference? What is depersonalization and what is derealization?
Well, derealization is that a sense of dreamlike state, that removal when you daydream, that's derealization, where depersonalization is when you actually kind of remove yourself from the situation. Similar to what you're describing here, either thinking about the ball game, but really removing all the senses where you're not hearing, you're not listening, you're really removing yourself so that you're putting yourself into a different place as if you're looking at yourself from outside of yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're stepping outside of your body.
Yes.
And you remove yourself from your own body, which is convenient because this way you don't have to feel a lot of the feelings in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Derealizing, on the other hand, it's a state of mind that you don't expect to happen. You don't do this. Suddenly you feel like you're in space. Suddenly you feel like you're living in a dream. Something is off. Reality is not reality. And you feel funny. So derealizing is another way of protecting yourself from a stimulation that you don't like. Now, anxiety can do this to you automatically. Some of these things are benign. They're not necessarily bad. They happen. It's your way of protecting yourselves. Others of them can become serious, like dissociation. Dissociation is where you actually split off from yourself, and the you that's left behind is not even aware that there's another you there. And people who usually dissociate have usually been objects of brutality, physical, sexual, mental brutality that's been so painful that you sit there and you just couldn't take it, so you left with your body, with your mind. You have no feelings left. How many of you ignore people you know when they irritate you? What do you think you do when somebody is doing something irritable, nagging you, picking on you, and you go off and make believe you don't hear them? See, in a way, you're stepping out of reality at that moment. Because rather than say you're angry, rather than confront the issue, you turn yourself down. You actually shut yourself down. These are some of the ways that we do this. They're not bad, my friends. It's kind of an amazing thing that humans do. Amazing that a human has the talent, the power, the strength to rewire their bodies and minds to deal with situations in this way. And when you're a child, it's really important to be able to do it. Because everybody's bigger than you are. And you depend on them for food, shelter, nurturance. But when you're grown up, you don't need these anymore. These you don't need to use as much, but you get so used to them, you do them. Depression is a habit. Yep, depression's a habit. It's an addiction. You get so used to using it as a way of defending yourself that it becomes something you can't let go of. Now, among these different defenses that we have, different ways that we have them, where was our list of 12? Hold on a second. There are 15 very common defenses. We talked about denial. That's the refusal to accept reality as a fact. We make believe it just doesn't exist. I have it frequently with parents who come in with their children. How is your child? They're just a little nervous. Right? Denial. You don't want to see it. You don't want to see what's wrong. You would have to deal with the consequences. Now, another very famous thing that people like to do is when a human becomes disorganized, when they feel danger, they tend to feel disorganized. You ever feel that way, like your mind's running everywhere? One of the things we do when we feel disorganized is we try to organize. We want to put things in their proper place. We say, wait a minute, there's too much noise here. Let me clean up the kitchen. Let me straighten out my room. Let me get my thoughts together. And from that comes another defense called compartmentalization. In this way, you separate things from awareness. You separate things. You push them aside. You put them in categories where you can understand them. Another thing that people often do frequently is a thing called projection. Now, in projection, you feel something, but you're not comfortable with your feeling. So you say other people feel it towards you. You project onto somebody else. You misattribute to a person's undesired thoughts, feelings, or impulses. They don't have these feelings, but you make believe they do. They were feeling this way. They are feeling, you project it. You actually put it back to you. These are just a few. I'm sure by now you're identifying some of the things you do. And some of you are going to say, hey, I do all of those things. Every one of those at one time or another. It's kind of natural to do.
Another one is acting out. Acting out is when you perform an extreme behavior in order to express your feelings or thoughts that you're not able to express. So when you're feeling angry, you kind of throw a book out at somebody instead of being able to express it perhaps in verbally or be able to understand and explain why it is that you feel that way. So there's that acting out, that impulsive, which of course when we're speaking to children, they can so easily relate to, as I think we all can. Another one is...
Well, wait, going back to that one, a temper tantrum is classic acting out, but also so is passive-aggressive. Passive-aggressive anger, which is anger that you don't feel, but you kind of get to the other person. You show up late, you cancel appointments, you do things wrong that are expected of you. That's passive-aggressive acting out. So you have a friend who's mad at you, and your friend shows up late for your dinner date, spoils your night, and you've been had. But that's acting out. That's a person who's not comfortable with what they feel.
There's also that that regression. Regression is another, I think, very common one. It's, again, when you're speaking to children, it's very easy for them to understand how when they're anxious or they're upset, they're overwhelmed with the feelings, and so they may go to a behavior that they used to use, maybe bedwetting, maybe some other behavior or activity that showed up earlier in their life, so that there's a regression. We go backward. We use what maybe I used as an adolescent, even though I'm an adult. So we regress. Our behavior goes back.
Back to regressing is being in an earlier time in your life. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if a person is depressed and anxious, they'll stay in bed, just like a baby. I'm going to stay in bed. I'm not going to leave my bed. This is the way it is. And they stay in bed depressed, which is a combination of depression and regression at the same time. And then there are times that you just feel like an infant. You feel like a child. Someone is yelling at you. You start screaming back, you know, as if it's as if you're a five-year-old child yelling, not just an adult talking. Now, this regression can also be caused not just by outside stimuli. Very often, all of these defenses can come as a result of internal changes, such as sexual awareness, sexual arousal, coming into your sexuality, growing sexual impulses. So suddenly here you are just, you know, kind of regular adolescent, and all of a sudden you start getting these stimulants, erections, and things like that, and it makes you nervous. It does. It brings up this anxiety. And now you have to deal with it. If there are prohibitions in your mind saying you're wrong for being this way, then you will use the different mechanisms. You'll still use compartmentalization. You'll put it in places. You'll use regression. You'll make yourself into a child. There are so many people I know, especially, well, men and women, who make themselves children instead of living out their adult sexuality. Armand DeMille here with Linda Vanello. We're talking about the defense mechanisms that people use, which are kind of interesting to see because we're going to take your calls and see what you're used to also. Now, another is called repression. Repression is the unconscious blocking of unacceptable thoughts, feelings, and impulses. The key to repression is that people do it unconsciously. So they often have little control over it. Memories can be repressed. You forget about things. Forget about it. You know, it's a defense. I don't remember it. Remember when your father beat you and you were, no, I don't remember that. Do you remember? No, I don't remember that. I forget the memory. I've seen people in families fighting with each other over repressed memories. Because one person will say, here's the reality, Uncle Sam used to creep into our room at night and do dirty things to us. And the other one would be actually violent and say, no, he didn't. He never did such a thing. Whereas the memory may be real. Okay, there's also repressed memories that are not real. Repressed memories that you made up in your mind and then you forgot about. But it doesn't make it less real because the reason you made it up in your mind was because you were a terrified kid. So repressed memories don't have to be validated as real or not real, but it's to your benefit to acknowledge that they existed. Whew. Too much stuff so far, my friends. Our telephone number here today is 212-209-2900. We will be taking your calls a little later. How do you defend yourself? How do you take care of yourself? How do you protect yourself? It's perfectly natural. I sit with a person, I sat with a lovely young person today, and I look at them and I try to, in my short time that I spend with people, I've got to figure out, how did you get here? What road did you take to get your mind to the place where you're so unhappy so frequently? How is it serving you? How did you get here? How do we get out of this maze? What's the way? You think everybody should take medication? Everybody should run in the park. Everybody should do yoga. Everybody should be in therapy. No, no. Once you understand how a person got there, you can see a path out. But there is no path out for everybody. Not that I know of, at least. Except listening to The Positive Mind. Tuesdays and Wednesdays here on WBAI when we're around. 212-209-2900, not yet, but we will be taking a call. The most common of all that people do nowadays, and are more likely to do among the people who listen to our program. What defense is that, Linda?
That's intellectualization. I think that's a very common one that we can all relate to that. Intellectualization is when we emphasize our thinking. We think it through when confronted with an unacceptable impulse or a situation or something that is really upsetting me. I will think it through, and that helps me to calm my feelings, calm my thoughts, and sort of put it into what I see as a more acceptable way of being. So therefore, I'm depressing my feelings, but I'm kind of thinking it through. Well, it's not really worth getting myself upset. I'm just going to create high blood pressure. So it's not really silly. It's not really important. So I'll just sort of deflate it.
Well, you know, let's keep in mind also that as one of our positive defenses, intellectualization does work. If you get a terminal medical illness, you know, report, a diagnosis, what you may do is rather than face the fact that you're probably going to die and go through all the grief and worry that goes with that, instead you'll focus on all the details of all the possible healings, the medical procedures, and you'll go through it. But some of that may pay off for you. Being able to intellectualize is a positive as well as negative. There are some people I know who just are heartless. They're like, if I only had a heart from The Wizard of Oz, you know? They just can't do it. All they could do is think. And it's a pity because love is very difficult with them. The feeling is there somewhere, but it's untouchable. Now, there's also another called rationalization. Rationalization is putting something into a different light or offering a different explanation for your perceptions. For instance, a woman who starts dating a man, she really, really likes him and thinks the world of him, suddenly is dumped by the man for no reason. She reframes the situation in her mind by saying, I suspected he was a loser all the time. So intellectualization kind of leads to rationalization, but rationalizing means you're going to make sense out of something that hurt. And just as well. As we said, not all of these are pathological. Some of them hurt you, some don't. The ones that really hurt you are things like dissociation. But denial, you could get by denying. You know, you could get by with doing these. Let's go to undoing.
Undoing, Arman, is the attempt to take back what is really an unconscious behavior or thought that is hurtful or unacceptable. For example, after realizing that you just insulted your significant other unintentionally, you might spend the next hour praising their beauty and their charm and their intellect by undoing the previous action. I'm trying to counteract the damage done so that I hope that the two will sort of balance out one another. I'm sort of undoing what I've done that maybe wasn't really what I really wanted to do.
I know a woman who said she can get her husband to do something mean. She says, because I love what he does for the next 10 hours and trying to make up for it. She says, I just look hurt when he does something. And then from then on, he's sunk. He's just always trying to do, can I get you this? Can I do this for you? Can I? And I just stayed a little bit of a funk, she said. Don't let hold back just a little, like the wound he delivered on me. So his nature to undo is what she manipulates to get more. Then eventually she'll have to undo it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we're going over a bunch of things that are called the different ways that we get through. And the last one I'm going to mention is displacement. Now, displacement is redirecting your thoughts, feelings, and impulses directed at one person or object, but taking them out on another person. It's like kicking the dog. People often use displacement when they can't express their feelings in a safe manner to the person they're directed to. The classic example is a guy who gets angry at his boss, can't express his anger at his boss for fear of being fired. Instead, he comes home and starts an argument with his wife. Displacement is you go from feeling powerless to where you can feel powerful. Displacement, I even believe, is you get angry at your boss and you come home and you chop wood. You're just trying to get that aggressive energy outside of your body. But it's real displacement when you put it on somebody else. Naturally, it's a pretty ineffective defense mechanism, because while the anger finds a route of expression, its misapplication to other harmless people will cause additional problems for most people. And then if you use displacement plus undoing, you're really sunk. Because now you've displaced, you've gotten upset, you blamed your wife, your daughter, and now that you've done that, now you have to make up for it. Now you can't stop making up for it. Then you got to intellectualize and try to figure it out. Then you got to say what I'm going to do for myself. I'm compartmentalized. I'll put this over there. I'll take her to the movies. Then I'll take her out to dinner. Oops, and then you feel yourself getting angry and having to do this. So you repress all your feelings. Right? And now you're going to push them down so you really don't feel them. And then she'll ask you, you know, were you feeling bad? And you deny it. You say, no, I don't really feel it. But then you have a reaction to that by kicking in a wall. And then you blame your neighbor for feeling bad towards his wife. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You can use everyone, can't you?
Yes, we can.
It's a lucky thing. What's interesting is that people figure this is part of themselves. People figure that it's a way that they really feel like it's a natural and honest way of being. And in all the defense mechanisms, you're just the tendril that senses there's something wrong and it's trying to keep in balance. Now, balance does not mean that you want to be even-keeled. The ideal human state is ready to respond. You want to be even-keeled with just a little bit of an edge so that, if necessary, you could respond. What happens when all these defenses go in is the edge gets too high. And your edge suddenly goes over the top. And before you feel panic, you say to yourself, something's wrong here. I've got to respond. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Play you a little music. And then we'll continue with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
I want to know. I want to know. Vorrei sapere. Vorrei sapere. Come fa la gente a concepire di poter vivere nelle case d'oggi, scatolati come le acciughe, nascono i bimbi che han già le rughe. I want to know, I want to know, I want to know, I want to know. Perché la gente non dice niente ai Mr. Hyde, ai Dr. Jekyll, i costruttori di questi orrori che senza un volto fanno le case dove la carie germoglia già. I want to know, I want to know, I want to know, I want to know. Why, why, why forever? Why, why, why forever?
Adriano Celentano. It should be the theme song for Occupy Wall Street, because it's a song about, I want to know why all of these people living so poorly and not having all of the things. In fact, somebody should look this one up. They need to get the words to it, the lyrics to it, or the song itself, to get in touch with me. It may not be available. Adriano Celentano. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind with Linda Vanelli here on WBAI. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. We're talking about how people take care of themselves, how they defend themselves, and how these different defenses turn into pathologies. They get crazier and crazier the more dug in you get with them. So here's the question that I would imagine. Imagine you thought I was the smartest man on earth. Just imagine that. And if you thought, okay, Armand is the smartest guy on earth, and I trust him. I trust that if I ask him a question, he's going to answer that question as best he can. He's going to say, here's the truth. So I'm going to say to him, look, I met this guy, and this guy really says that he's married and he's going to leave his marriage, but he just wants to be with me for now. What do you think? And then I would answer back, well, it's okay. That's a familiar story. Sounds to me like the man wants to be able to get together with you in some way. It may be true, but most probably not. That would be my honest answer. If you came to me and you said, I'm thinking of bringing up my child in my home by myself and not having anybody else come in the house, what do you think of that? I'd give you my opinion. If opinion was what we wanted, we would ask somebody who we could trust. But who could you trust? Can you trust your mother? Can you trust your father? Do they have their personal interests? Can you trust a therapist? No. Because therapists want you to get stronger to discover your own answer. Therefore, there's very few people that you can go to and say, please tell me what you think. Therefore, you're told to trust yourself. But how can you trust yourself when you know your mind is taking all these different pathways? How do you know what to trust? They tell you follow your gut. You can't follow your gut. Your gut is an instinctual response. Follow your higher self. Your higher self is terrified of anger. So you can't follow your higher self, because what if you had an angry feeling you had to deal with? It's okay, trust your mother. Well, your mother's going to worry about you. So how do you get to trust yourself? And I think the way you get to it is you get to understand yourself. You get to learn the way you are, the way you think. You could say, ah, that's me doing that funny thinking. That's the answer to it. That's one. And you find somebody like a good friend who you really could trust, who will give you an opinion, and you know that they have a bias. So if you ask your friend who's stuck in his marriage, did he think you should get divorced, he may say to you, no. But that's because he's stuck in his place. 212-209-2900. I will try to tell you as best I can what I think of things, but mainly my job is to help you build your own strength. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi there. I got you now.
Okay. Oh, hi. Hi, hi Armand. There. This is Susan.
Hello, Susan.
Hi. Wow. I really am glad to hear your topic today because it is going to help me, I think. So far, I'm a little overwhelmed, and I really want to take it all in.
Overwhelmed because it was so much information?
Yeah, because it cuts to the chase.
Yes, and you could also always replay it. Well, see, what we try to do is do enough programming so that you could go into the website and replay it piece by piece.
And I have to get speakers because I don't have speakers, but I was just going to say, and I didn't say, but I need to buy speakers because I really need to hear this over. But I want to tell you that just yesterday I had one of my heart-to-heart talks with myself. A friend calls it strength talks. And my device, other than the ones you already talked about, is self-pity. Does that qualify?
Sure. What is self-pity like? Tell me.
Well,
do it for me.
Okay. Oh, man. Do it for me. Well, because I can never get my mother's love or approval, although she says that, you know, she loves me.
Well, forget about the reason. I want you to know how your self-pity works.
Then I feel, when I hear that, when I'm rejected, I say, well, you know, I really am, if I can't get love, then I'm unlovable. I will never get love. And it goes down the rabbit hole, and then I feel incapable, although I know that is absolutely not true, and I feel sorry for myself, and I think that I have.
How does your mother feel when you get like that?
Oh man, I left her a message, and she's never called me back. I was crying, I was blubbering. I'm sorry for doing this, and please, when we have a disagreement, you know, let's talk about it. And oh, total silence. And this was maybe 2 months ago. And
so you were trying to use undoing. You were trying to go there and say, "Mommy, let's make it okay again."
Oh, well, it's kind of sort of. We had a 73-minute conversation where she did admit to some stuff. But it was like really pulling teeth, and I said, "Do not hang up on me," because that's usually what she does, and she didn't.
So your mother is not likely to ever look at you as a child and have pity on you, eh?
That's right.
So if your mother's not going to do it, why not do it yourself?
Yeah, what?
You know what I mean? I mean, who's going to feel? I feel pity for you. Am I allowed to? Sure. I feel terrible that you're in such pain. I feel terrible that you're in pain. I feel terrible that not only you, I mean, this is not to make you unspecial, but it's difficult to see how much pain people live with. And yours is being, it's like you're an orphan. It's like you don't have a mother.
I told my father once, I said, I feel like I'm an orphan with two living parents.
Yeah.
It's so true, but I don't want to live like this because my life is passing by and I'm not doing what I want to do. I'm just living in this hole. And I looked online and I found a quote, "Self-pity is a death that has no resurrection. A sinkhole from which no rescuing hand can drag you because you have chosen to sink."
Yeah.
It's a choice.
Well, but you know, here's the problem with it. Problem with the quote is it is a sinkhole that you could climb out of.
I hope so.
You know, it's like it's just a place of safety. It's like going in a cave.
Oh.
You're hiding out in the cave until, you know, you're sure the air is clear, till you grow your talons and your teeth and you get ready to fight again.
Oh.
You are no wimp, Susan. I could hear it. You're a fighter. You're somebody who, if I had trouble and I needed you to help, you'd be there in a minute.
Absolutely. And so, that's what I do. But I'm
not worried
for other
about
people.
You.
I'm not that. Why am I not there this, in the same way?
There are an awful lot of people like that, in Susan,
but
in
this
world.
I don't want to be that way. I want to be there for me, too.
All right. All right, if you insist.
Well,
that
no.
makes a little less for the rest of us, but okay.
No,
we'll spare
plenty
a little
to
of you.
Go around. I love doing, you know, helping.
All right, so what is one thing you could do over the next 24 hours that would be an act of kindness to yourself that you might not normally do?
Wow. It's pretty foreign.
Yeah, what about a massage?
Getting a massage?
Yeah, what about that?
I am a massage therapist.
I know that.
You know that?
Of course I know that. What about getting a massage?
I have no money to get a massage. My life has gotten smaller.
What about $15 to walk into a nail salon where they give you a back massage?
Oh, I see. So it's a, what about like...
What about an... What do you mean like it's a what? It's an anything. It's an anything you give yourself.
So
and the reason I choose your profession to do it is you give to others... So go get some for yourself.
Okay.
Now, this is an interesting thing. Because when you give that, knowing you, if you were to get a massage, you'd probably help the masseur massage you.
Not really. Probably teach
him tricks. No, you give
him. Well, I might offer some. But usually in the past, I have not really... I've received. I'm a good receiver.
All right. So can I ask you just for today?
Yeah.
Would you give yourself one?
Self-massage?
Not a self-massage. Have somebody massage you.
Mm.
You're groaning, right?
I feel like I want to say yes, but I don't want to lie, and I just got, like, really hot, like I got sweaty.
Oh, good. It's working.
No, but I...
My mechanism's working. Good. We're getting through the fire. It's wonderful.
I don't know. I don't know, like, I don't have money to do this. I'm telling you, I do not have... money to do this.
I understand. It's not money.
It's not?
No. You have a friend. You have anybody.
I have to think. I don't know. I'm nervous now. We're very, very anxious.
See, now, what we did was I wanted to prove how the defense mechanism works, and I'm proving it to you. Okay. We start off with nervousness. The nervousness sends us into our defense. I purposely penetrated that defense just now by going into your profession and trying to get you to have somebody exercise your profession on you. That challenged your structure, because your structure is based on doing this for other people. That set off a whole series of anxieties. So if you were in therapy now, you would be changing. You'd literally be changing at this moment. So at this moment, there is a change taking place. I don't care if you get massaged or not.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted you to sweat. I wanted to see a change potential in you. And for as long as you need it, Susan, you need some pity, you call me up anytime. I got plenty.
I know you do. You're very caring. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling
in. You're welcome.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille taking your calls. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, this is Paulette from Andover.
Hey, Paulette from Andover. Andover?
Yeah.
Michigan?
Yeah. New Jersey.
Okay.
You put a name to something that I recognized but didn't have a name for. My cousin, who's in a nursing home, recently was dropped and her legs were broken, and she doesn't remember it. But when I sit beside her, she'll suddenly say, "Call the nurse, I'm falling."
Yep.
And I ask her, "Do you remember being dropped?" And she says, "No, I wasn't dropped."
Yeah.
We grew up together. We were physically, emotionally, and verbally abused as children. And her much worse than me.
Oh, Paulette, it must hurt you so much to see her like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm crying now.
I hear.
And I tell myself, she's still alive. She's still here. You haven't lost her. You haven't lost her yet.
Yeah.
But it's ripping my heart out.
Of course. course.
And we took her out of a really bad nursing home. We thought this was a good place. And mostly it is. There's just a few bad people there.
You know, Paulette, when you feel powerless over something like this, when you're losing somebody you love and you feel powerless, you're always looking for a place to blame somebody. And usually it's the agency that people blame. Of course, you know, they probably sloppy and they probably made mistakes and all this stuff. But what's really going on is the pain you're feeling for losing her.
Uh-huh.
So your anger is going to protect you, you see? Okay. Stay angry if you must. But what you did learn about it is you did see how she could easily take this thing that happened and not feel it, and how easy it is to do that. So that makes her life a little easier along the way.
Uh-huh.
You know, at least she has that, and she's got you.
Uh-huh.
You'll never lose her, by the way. Even when she's gone, she'll never be gone. She'll always have a little spot right inside your heart where she's going to take up permanent residence. I'm sure of that.
What was the name of the thing that she's doing? By not remembering at all.
Repression.
I think you had a different name.
Okay.
For totally having it not happen.
Dissociation. Depersonalization.
That's probably it. Depersonalization. I think that was the name you said.
Denial.
All right. Well, listen. Thanks for calling in and my best wishes to you.
Thanks.
212-209-2900. Tears, huh? Tears are the sweat of the heart. So, if you're nervous, it's a good thing. If you recognize the nervousness and just don't react to it by doing things, then you could say, aha, a change is going to happen. I'm about to change. I'm about to shift. It's the people who don't feel the nervousness but instead act it out. Those are the ones who get in trouble. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Yep.
Hello.
Yes, I can hear you. Talk a little louder, please.
Hi. I was just calling about, you were talking earlier about defense mechanisms. What about the people who they've done things to you like this. I mean, for me, I'm talking about my mom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've, like, either through abuse or neglect, you've, like, scarred me certain ways. And as an adult, when all of these things come back and things that I've regret, they come too. And you talk to your parents about your mom, particularly about that. They're like, you know, they come up with, it didn't happen like that, or this is what I meant, when you know it's totally different and they refuse to own up to, you know, what they did or what they failed to do. And,
What's your name? What's your name?
My name is Clyde.
Clyde, good name. Clyde.
Yes.
What? I like that you came up with that fast. Clyde. Hey, Clyde, question for you. What are you looking for from your mother? You want contrition? Do you want her to say I'm sorry?
Well, she's the kind of person who does not, she'll be nicer to you. She won't say, oh, I'm sorry, I did this, I know, I'm sorry. She'll be nicer to you, you know. And
right,
people...
okay, so Clyde, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Be your mother for a minute.
Yeah.
I want you to be her as if you're acting a role. And I want you to give me the true apology to Clyde right now. I want you to say, my son... And then I want you to give me what would be perfect that your mother would say that would really make you feel better. Do it now, as if you're acting. Okay, as if you have a role in the theater.
Yeah, I would say, like...
Okay, now, instead of saying I would say, I just want you to say it. I want you to be her and say it to Clyde. Or son.
I've done for you the best that I could with what I knew at the time. I'm sorry I neglected you in this way. I'm sorry I put you in that situation, but... No buts.
I want you to apologize. I want you to say, I'm sorry I did that to you, kid. Don't explain it. Give him a real apology.
Sorry I did that to you. Sorry I left you in that situation and those things happened to you. you know, I'd like us to move forward and
How about please forgive me, son?
Yeah, please forgive me.
Say those words. Please forgive me, son.
Please forgive me,
son. Okay, now say that again.
Please forgive me, son.
Okay, now be on the other side of this. I want you to be the son who just heard his mother say that. Please forgive me, son. What could you say back to her?
You know, you're forgiven. We have to move forward in some sort of, like, healthy, meaningful way.
Okay, so could you say, okay, Mom, I forgive you.
Okay, Mom, I forgive you.
Stop there. So here's the dialogue. Please forgive me, son. Okay, Mom, I forgive you. Or, I don't know, Mom, it may take me a little while to forgive you. But either way, that's the dialogue you're looking for. That's the one you're searching for that you're not going to get from your mom. But you're going to get it from her heart. Some part of her feels that she just can't say it. So then the next step is up to you. The part of you that probably can't say, can't really bring it out. So on your side, eventually, when you're ready, whenever you're ready, you're going to say, it's okay. I forgive you. I'm ready to move on. When you're ready. And only when you're ready.
Well, Dr. Mo, let me ask you, you know, I've had some, like, gripes as far as the failure that she spends time with her grandchildren. You know, it's like, listen, he's your grandchild. You're only two blocks away when you're in town. And you don't even want to get out of bed to come to the hospital to camp out to have your grandchild come into the world. You know, I mean, for me, that tells me that that really isn't too high up on your priority list or
whatever reason.
To get an honest answer, it's like pulling teeth.
Of course you can. Like, of course. She doesn't know herself. Of course. You know yourself. She doesn't know herself.
Yeah,
so you can't get it.
I feel awful for her that her state has come to this.
That's right.
You know, but she's grown. Nothing I can do to change her except love her from a distance. I'd like to be more
That's
involved.
Exactly
I'd like
the
to
way.
Have meaningful conversations with her, you know, but it just doesn't happen. It takes two to have that happen, and it just hasn't happened. I just kind of, you know, thanks, Mom. Thanks for coming over and, just have it surface, but show her in one way or the other that I still do care in spite of her shortcomings that way.
Yep.
That's kind of all I can do. It feels sad for me. I see other families where, grandma, grandpa is very active, very involved in their life. And, when I see that, a little part of me is sad because, you know, I wish I had that, and they don't.
I understand, Clyde. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. Hey, for the benefit of Mr. Kate, we'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Do send me an email.